Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey everyone, welcome to a good football show from NBC Sports Edge. I am Matt Straub, and this is part two of your week four fantasy preview show. On part one, it was Thursday Night Football plus Lions, Bears, Colts, Dolphins, Chiefs, Eagles, Seahawks, Niners, and Browns, Vikings, I believe. And today, as we always do, we'll be hitting the remaining 10 games. I'm joined by John Daigle, Pat Daugherty, and Denny Carter. I'm always terrified, by the way, that I'm going to say the wrong name, like I'm going to mix up the games that you guys did in part one. And actually, Matt, we're doing all of those games today and I haven't prepared for them, but I think I got them all right, didn't I? I think we're good there.
It was also a good show, but we had some lousy games yesterday, to be honest. Like, and that's because it is an odd week where like nothing really stands out, admittedly. A bunch of divisional showdowns, even though there are four games with over 50 totals, it's still, we're trying to figure out a few teams here and there. So it is just honestly an odd week altogether.
You left out, by the way, Matt, we did the Winnipeg Jets and Seattle Kraken.
Yeah.
Okay. But you didn't even mention that one.
Yeah, sorry. That was at the end. I must not have made it to that far yet. I also say, to the point that Daigle was saying, I mean, a similar kind of story this week. Like, I mean, for this latter part of the preview show, when you look at the 1 p.m. games, it's a lot of strange ones, maybe some stinkers, but certainly not the first one we're going to talk about. Go ahead, Pat.
I was going to say, you know, I chose the games for the Wednesday pod. And I was like, well, you know, I want to make sure I don't take all the good ones. And I was like, well, wait a minute. There are no good ones.
Right.
So it wasn't too hard.
There is one good one, which will be on NBC, as the Patriots and Bucks.
That's a good point. That's a hot tamale. That's a hot tamale.
That's one. Can you
remind me which game that is? I haven't heard about it just yet.
It's
something about someone going back somewhere.
It's Kraken Jets.
Let's begin, though, with one I would argue could, in theory, be a good game. Carolina at Dallas, a total of 50.5. We would say this is the first real test for a Panthers D that has been really impressive on paper, but has only faced the Jets, the Saints, and the Texans. So, Daigle, taking that all into account, do you look at this as a tough matchup for Dak Prescott, Zeke, Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb, or is that still TBD at this point?
It has literally, for me anyways, just been the schedule. And the schedule for Dak Prescott and the Cowboys offense hasn't mattered thus far. Matching the Bucs point for points, taking it to the wire against the Chargers, and then, of course, last week's debacle against the Eagles. And that's why I think it's still going to be an up-tempo, high-scoring affair. Because even if you're looking at the other side, how do the Panthers answer? I also think the Cowboys defense is getting the benefit of the doubt since it has been a bend and don't break unit, getting a little too much credit for living off a league high 8 turnovers while they're still allowing a top 3 rate in yards per play and raw passing yards and only registering 4 sacks to date. Sam Darnold also 35.5 attempts per game and 8 yards per attempt when he hasn't been needed to throw that often, and they've still been letting him do it since the Panthers have yet to trail at any point or be in a competitive game all year. So this is really the first time we're going to see an offense that can answer the Panthers. And so it actually is pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, to your point, and to John's point, like, the Panthers, like, enter week four, like, by yardage, like, far and away the league's number one pass defense and rush defense. And as John said, it's because they played the Jets, Saints, and the Texans. But it is interesting they're at least doing what they're supposed to do against those bad teams, which was not something the Panthers defense did last year at all. But we are finally going to find out what kind of defense this is this week. And as John mentioned, I mean, Sam Darnold, he's had 278 yards in every game. I think he's averaged at least 8.0 yards per attempt every game so far. No Christian McCaffrey. They definitely looked less in sync without Christian McCaffrey last week. But, I mean, this John laid out perfectly. This is going to be a big test for both defenses, who we are well improved so far in 2020. But, we have yet to get an accurate representation of who either of these defenses really are.
You'll probably hear me use the terms run funnel and pass funnel defense quite a lot, because I think that after 3 weeks, we have a decent, you know, understanding and idea of which defenses are run funnels and which defenses are pass funnels. Now, we have two teams here, both the Panthers and the Cowboys are pass funnels. Only the Bucks have a higher percentage of yards against them come through the air than the Cowboys. And then Carolina is not too far down, only fifth in the league in that category. So I think you're going to have receivers from both teams seeing much larger days than perhaps we've seen recently. I don't think we have to worry about CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper in this one. I think the Cowboys are taking what defenses are giving them, or like
it's a nightmare.
Are exploiting? It's terrible. It's the worst. But they're exploiting other teams' defenses. And we saw that last week against an Eagles defense, which is a run funnel defense. Imagine that.
Cowboys second overall in average time of possession. And that's literally because they just own the ball. They literally just do whatever they want. And they know they can do whatever they want. You saw that against the Eagles, where they could have scored at will, but it doesn't matter. They're just going to soak up the possession, still score, and then hope to make a few plays, being a ferocious defense.
Tony Pollard quickly was less productive in week 3 in the box score, but actually played more snaps than he did in week 2, I think 29 to 21 the prior week. Pat, I see you have him ranked as the RB 32. How do you feel about that ranking? Like, do you feel like there's a chance you're too low on Pollard based on the snaps rising?
I mean, I think it could be too high as well, or it's again with the Cow. I mean, is are these two man backfields, is this what they really want to do, or is this like a function of the kind of weird game flows? And the weird game flow being in week 3, as John mentioned, they were just kind of doing whatever they wanted to against the Eagles. And Zeke Elliott looked as good as he had all season in week 3, looked much springier. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just because the box score is better. He looked better, but definitely thought he looked better. And definitely just feel like I don't know where I want to put Tony Pollard, but even if it's kind of strange game scripts that have developed, it is 3 games and he's been heavily involved in all 3 games. He's certainly earned like a flex benefit of the doubt for now. And I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of settles into that RB 28 to 34 range. Like, this is kind of where his permanent home for the rest of the season. But I mean, there is room to grow. I mean, he has looked better than Zeke most of the year and, you know, last year, of course. But I feel like RB 32 is an appropriate hedge right now, because Zeke is still, I mean, far and away the touch leader. He's still going to be the primary goal line guy. He's definitely, no matter what, even if it's kind of like unusual games, through 3 games, that kind of usage, you have to put Pollard in the flex ranks.
And it's a similar rates and usage to what we discussed last week even. Zeke has now out-touched Pollard 51 to 35 on the year. He's also second among all running backs in routes run, even though he's been out-targeted by Pollard 8-7 so far through 3 games, even though Pollard is 50th in that metric. So overall, the usage is still all there for Elliott. We are not panicking. And hope for more games like that where they can use both intelligently.
Do you guys see this as, for those of us who drafted Robbie Anderson, I should say, are we looking at this as kind of his last shot? I mean, if he can't get it done with no CMC on the field, are we done with Robbie Anderson? Denny, are we potentially dropping him if it's another dud this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are to that point. Pat and I talked on, what was it, Tuesday with Jen Eakins about Robbie Anderson. He's getting plenty of snaps, running plenty of routes. It's not like, you know, it's not like he's being limited in that way. He's not. He's out there. It's just that he's not involved. So this is a plus matchup for wide receiver usage. So if it's Terrace Marshall and DJ Moore ripping it up this week, then yeah, there's a major issue and you should consider dropping Anderson.
I mean, this is like the telling week for Anderson, because he's got like the squeaky wheel thing going, where his own coach, Matt Rhule, said they needed him to get more involved. It's they're going to be their first shootout game script. But I mean, I think we're going to see more of what we saw in weeks 1 to 3, because as Denny and I talked about, his average depth of target has almost literally doubled from last year. It's a small sample size, 3 games, but his ADOT last year was 9.6. Right now it's 18.4. Like, they've returned him to that field stretching burner role. and they want DJ Moore to be like the all-purpose guy. Terrace Marshall can make some big plays out of the slot, and they're just trying to take advantage of Robbie's like signature skill set. And so I think maybe the targets will go up this week just because clearly that's something Matt Rhule is going to prioritize. I'm sure he's heard from Robbie Anderson, why am I not getting the ball more? But it's kind of hard to believe the role is going to change. After three games, they're just going to throw their car in reverse. Like, all right, we're going to use Robbie the way we did in 2020. This seems to be the new Robbie for 2021.
And there's nothing wrong with having an ADOT over 18. It's just a matter of you have to get volume. You can't live off 3.5 targets per game. Otherwise, you're just in MVS's role. I also think what helps them is that there's this great unknown now since we're taking Christian McCaffrey and Dan Arnold's 4 targets per game out of this offense. So who do they go to? Because it's not guaranteed to just plug in Tommy Trimble or plug in Hubbard at McCaffrey's role. It could be elsewhere as well. So if it doesn't happen this week, you will see him on the drop list on the waiver wire.
I gotta say real quick, H-back Tommy Trimble is now Denny's across the board, his RB1 on most of his teams. So
that's right. We're plugging in Trimble over Saquon Barkley this week. I'm kidding.
And you are clearly not overthinking Hubbard. You're starting him. Low end RB1, fringe RB2. I don't care what you want to rank him, but you're starting him.
Absolutely.
Next up, we have a couple of 1-2 teams. The Washington football team comes to Atlanta. Pat did not listen to me when I told him, blanket statement, take the Falcons for part one of the preview every week moving forward. But here we are. The football team favored by 1.5, a total of 47.5. This highly touted Washington D has not been good the last couple weeks. They gave up 29 to the Giants, 43 to the Bills. Denny, I do worry that this Falcons offensive line could maybe be the cure for what ails this pass rush. But could you, with all that said, see this being the week that Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts get loose?
I don't know, because it's the way they're being used is all wrong for getting loose. You know, it's Ridley. I wrote him up today in the Target Dakota column. You know, everything is in line with what you want to see, except for, you know, he's not getting downfield targets. He's gotten 3 through 3 games of 20 yards or more, and he's caught none of them. He led the league in downfield targets and receptions last year. So here's a stat that I found. Last week, he had a 5.5 yards per target. That's the 7th lowest of his whole career. And the rest, if you look at the other 6 games, came before he was even a full-time player in the Atlanta offense. So it is really concerning usage. He's not a team killer, Ridley. But he's not a league winner either. I think that he's somewhere in between. He's a top 20, definitely a top 20 wide receiver on sheer force of volume. I don't know if this matchup makes that big of a difference.
He's not getting downfield targets because Matt Ryan just isn't throwing deep.
It's chicken or the egg, basically. Like, and yeah, I don't know why I cut you off. You go, Daigle.
No, you're good. You know, Ryan has averaged the 2nd lowest air yards per target, only ahead of Andy Dalton. Whereas Dalton has not completed or hasn't even thrown a pass over 15 yards downfield. Ryan has only completed 1 pass 15 yards downfield. It's the same for Kyle Pitts, who is running a route on 83% of Ryan's dropbacks, 14% target share. Without Russell Gage this past week, Pitts played a career high in snaps as a wide receiver from the boundary, and it just doesn't matter because Ryan looks washed right now, and this offensive play calling is not creative against a easy schedule so far. The Eagles, Buccaneers, who have not played well whatsoever through 3 games, and the Giants, who are getting scorched by every quarterback. So it's absolutely worrisome, even though the positive spin with Ridley, like Diddy said, is that at least he's getting pumped underneath. But his floor, the positive thing, the floor is a wide receiver 2, in my opinion. It's just a matter of he may not have a wide receiver 1 ceiling in this offense.
I mean, we just don't know. We don't even know what the reason for the usage is. Is it because this is how Arthur Smith wants to play football? Or is it just because this is the reality of the Falcons offensive line and Matt Ryan? So it's like, even if they want to like change the usage, like, can they even accomplish that? And this would be a great week because the football team has been bleeding receiver production. But Matt, like, as you alluded to, they certainly feel like the kind of matchup that's going to get the football team like off the schneid and finally get like a nice DST performance from the WFT. And so this is going to be a very, very telling game. Can the Falcons take advantage of a defense that's been struggling, or are the Falcons the matchup that's going to get taken advantage of by everybody because they can't block and their quarterback can't move?
Yeah, I tend to think it's the offensive line that's starting everything, but that's just from what I've watched. But it's all led to Cordero Patterson being like a very valid flex play in September 2021, which I don't know that we really need to get into that a lot. Pat, you have him ranked 31st among running backs this week. Probably something we never thought we would say at any point this season. Does anyone have anything to add about Cordero and what they've seen from him?
I do.
Taking Denny to the ship. That's what Denny's got to say.
That's right. We're riding CPAT all the way to every fantasy title. So it's actually, when I was looking at the snap shares in the Atlanta backfield, Mike Davis is still seeing 2/3 of the snaps, and CPAT is seeing about 1/3. But here's the thing. CPAT has 23% of the team's total opportunity. That's carries plus targets over the past 2 weeks. Davis has just 26% of the total opportunity. So Davis is in a lot more than Patterson, but when Patterson is in, the offense is kind of running through him. He has the second most targets among Falcons pass catchers. It's not good for the Falcons, Matt.
No.
I'm sorry, but it's happening, and it's a thing, and I think that the Falcons are going to be in a position where they're just going to have to give Patterson the ball quite a bit every week.
You can see them prioritizing getting him the ball in like the big moments of the game. Like they like clearly like actually believe in Cordero Patterson and like want the ball in his hands when they like really need a first down or a touchdown.
There was a funny meme where it was something about like Patterson like looking surprised, and it was like, am I the best player on this team?
It's funny because he is an explosive player, but it just feels terrible to be like, yeah, we're featuring Cordero Patterson. On the football team side of this, Antonio Gibson didn't practice Thursday, Pat. What's the latest there? Are we worried about your RB11 this week in any way, shape, or form?
It's seeming precautionary. He was not listed on the injury report Wednesday, despite apparently being spotted in a sleeve on his shin Wednesday. Perhaps he should have been listed, Washington football team. Perhaps you're going to be docked a second-round pick. No, it seemed like a minor injury report violation, but they're being brave right now. They're saying it's not a big deal. It's precautionary. And I haven't seen anything. It's just one of those situations. It all comes down to Friday. If he's out there on Friday, even if he's limited, there'll be very little reason to worry about his week 4 status.
The issue with Gibson also is that the coach speak has not come to fruition. He hasn't played a single snap from the 2-minute drill this year. And per Fantasy Points' Graham Barfield, just 3 targets on third down since all of last year as well. Whereas McKissick has 36 third down targets in that span. He's just not getting that role. And it's fine because he's still getting the touches among this backfield. But right now, especially as they move to a more hurry-up offense with Taylor Heinicke, who has been the QB12 and QB9 the past 2 weeks, then it's becoming more of a spot where they can get J.D. McKissick involved in a role he's comfortable and good in, honestly. So it's a bit of an issue for Gibson's ceiling overall.
But Gibson just needs more 75-yard receiving.
That's it.
Just to prove, you know, what they have in him. They need to see more of the 75-yard touchdowns in order to give him one.
He went for a 73-yard touchdown catch, and he finished with 73 receiving yards.
Awesome.
Yeah, too efficient. Too efficient. That's Gibson's fault.
Too good.
Very, very quickly, one more Washington football skill player I want to hit. Terry McLaurin has had 2 kind of quiet games this year, 262-yard games, actually, to be exact. 1 very noisy game against the Giants. Seems like this is much more of a boom spot for him, Pat.
It does. I mean, we want our players to be facing the Atlanta Falcons. And Terry, I mean, had the volume explosion in week 2. The targets and usage were still good in week 3. It was just a horrible, horrible game against the Bills for the football team's offense. Taylor Heinicke is like not the world's most accurate passer, but he's got the moxie and like kind of like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's willing to like try to like fit the ball in there. Basically, he's willing to get the ball to his playmakers, and that should be a situation. There should be able to do that against the Atlanta Falcons defense. Let's put it that way.
In leagues where players get rewarded for moxie, you have to start Heinicke in every format.
Continuing with the early games, this should be an absolute thriller. It is the Titans at the Jets. Tennessee favored by 7, a total of 44. Some injury issues among these Tennessee wide receivers. A.J. Brown, we expect to be out with a hamstring. Julio Jones, sidelined with a hamstring as well again on Thursday. Denny, is there a compelling next man up situation here, or is this just, you know, like a 35-carry Derrick Henry game where the Titans win easily and they don't have to do a lot?
Is definitely a 35-carry Derrick Henry day. Also, Henry's running pass routes on 50% of Ryan Tannehill's dropbacks, give or take. That is just tremendous. I can't get over it. It just blows up any theory that we had about Henry coming into the season. I'm not upset about it at all. So the next man up in the receiver group for Tennessee would be Nick Westbrook Ekhine. Is that right? Am I pronouncing that right?
I actually do not know.
Ekhine, not sure which one. Nick Westbrook for sure. NWI, Kevin Nash's faction. You can just go with that.
NWI. We're going to call him NWI. Yeah. So he ran a route on 81% of Tannehill's dropbacks in week three when A.J. Brown was out. Julio Jones was being load managed, I guess. NWI tied for the team lead in targets. And I mean, he's the unquestioned number one option if Julio doesn't go this week. I think Julio will go. But you could do worse than my guy, NWI.
I'd be worried about Julio. I mean, the load managed thing was clearly he injured his hamstring and they just didn't want to announce it on Sunday. Now he hasn't practiced back-to-back days. I mean, we know Julio is not like the most famous player in the league for playing through questionable tags, for playing through missed practices. And he has, and when he has, he's famously not productive. He's a guy, whenever he's been on the injury report, is usually kind of a box score disappointment. So I do have grave Julio Jones concerns for week four. How dare you undersell Chester Rogers, by the way, for the Titans. Yeah. He could be the compiler for the Titans. And Derrick Henry, by the way, 3 targets in each of his first 3 games. He had 1 3-target game in all of 2020. It seems like they have fixed the glitch there from our potential fake sharp Arthur Smith. But I have a crazy question here for Daigle. It's not – well, I guess it would be a spread question too because they would be covering the spread if they did this. Can I put 1 point on the New York Jets in my confidence points pool for a shocking upset for week 4?
It's funny you should ask that because this is the dumbest thing I'll say all week. But the Jets are live dogs. They really could be this bad, but we genuinely don't know since they have been fed to the wolves against the league's toughest schedule, both on paper and in the numbers through the first 3 games, opening against the Panthers, who currently lead the league in pressure rate and sacks, being served up on a silver platter with a rookie quarterback against Bill Belichick in week 2, and then becoming the sacrificial lambs for Denver's home opener in altitude. Now we finally have a terrific matchup. Now, if the Titans are able to get pressure, there still could be some issues here. But for the first time ever, I can say I am excited to see what Michael Carter, Corey Davis, and Zach Wilson do in a favorable matchup.
Well, so along those lines, are we buying into the Corey Davis revenge game possibility here? He's coming off 10 targets last week with just 5 catches, 41 yards. Danny, optimism for Corey Davis finally this week?
Yeah, this Tennessee secondary stinks. Like, it's really bad. And if it doesn't happen this week, there's like a major, major issue with Corey Davis and whoever's catching passes for the Jets. I think you just hold your nose and you plug in Corey Davis this week in 12 team leagues. And you're probably going to have to start him. Well, you know what? You might have injuries and you might actually like playing him. I'm not going to completely dismiss him as a desperation play.
And Elijah Moore is not practicing, by the way. He has a concussion. So that could be that factor, funneling more targets Corey Davis's way. I mean, he's reached at least 5 targets all 3 games, 7 targets 2 of 3 games. And that was in just hopeless games where the Jets quite literally could not move the ball. It was either turnover or 3 and out. And as we're saying, it's this Titans defense. We do not expect that to be the case. So Corey Davis says wide receiver 3 juice this week. Daigle is betting on the Jets to cover the spread. And I am picking the Jets outright in my confidence points pool with the stunning 1-point selection.
Wow. This is quite a turn of events here in favor. The tides have turned dramatically.
You're going to look up and see the Titans have the 3rd highest pressure rate in the league. I know that. But remember, they've played the Colts and Seahawks, who were 2nd and 9th overall in pressure rate allowed. So don't worry about the numbers. Provide the context. And perhaps, maybe, the Jets and our 7.5 get there.
Cannot wait. See, I'm now watching this game with such renewed zeal. I came in kind of, all right, well, we got to talk about this one. Now I'm pumped to watch it.
I have a feeling you're going to hear me recapping it on Sunday night, Monday morning.
I'll give it to you. People are going to be fighting over this game.
I don't know about that.
I want it.
The 0-3 Giants travel to New Orleans. Wait, are we in New Orleans for this game finally?
I think we are in New Orleans. Right? They have been cleared to return home. Mm-hmm. Their beautiful home in New Orleans. Thank God.
Yes. So they really do travel to New Orleans. The Saints are favored by 7.5, a total of just 42. Let's start with Saquon Barkley. He's coming off a season high 94 yards from scrimmage. a season-high 6 catches, found the end zone against the Falcons. We kind of expected a good game from Saquon there, but now a matchup against a tough Saints run D. At the same time, tilting back in Saquon's favor, a ton of Giants wide receiver injuries. So taking all that into account, what is Saquon's outlook in this one, Daigle?
Well, Barkley now top 5 already just through 3 games and backfield touch rate at 81% with 48 total touches. So much so that their big free agent pickup, one of them anyways, Devontae Booker, they felt confident in just healthy scratching him for no good reason last week. Having said that, you were still playing him as a low-end RB1, but I think the game environment here is miserable for both sides. The third lowest total, 43.5 points, over at our friends at PointsBet, and the Giants have the second lowest team total, just 17 points on the entire board, and missing 2 of their 3 starting wide receivers. While on the other side of the ball, there have only been 11 times in the last 2 decades that a team has attempted fewer than 23 passes for 3 consecutive games, the last being the 2012 Seahawks with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, because of course. And yet this Saints team, who are also draining the clock for the second most seconds between plays, have yet to attempt 23 passes in any game this year. And so I just think the play volume, the overall number of plays, the overall time in between plays, it's going to drag everything down in this game to probably make it the lowest scoring game on the entire board.
I mean, this is a true nightmare setup for Daniel Jones. He's facing a defense through 3 games that has double the amount of interceptions as passing touchdowns allowed. The Saints have 6 picks, have only allowed 3 passing scores. As you said, I mean, the Giants are going to be missing 2 of their starting receivers with hamstring injuries. And we're trying to get Kadarius Toney involved. And then, you know, where's the space going to be for Saquon Barkley? The Saints, you know, they faced Aaron Jones. They faced the run-heavy Patriots. I believe they faced the Panthers, I think. And they're allowing under 3 yards per carry, the Saints run defense. So it's just a horrible matchup for everyone involved in the Giants. But with Saquon, you know, he got the snaps back in week 2. He got the targets back in week 3. He's going to really, really need the targets in this game. As long as the Giants aren't going like literally 3 and out every series, I actually think there's like an RB1 path for Saquon, despite all the reasons I just laid out and all the reasons John laid out. Just the usage, we could be getting back to almost CMC level usage for Saquon Barkley.
Getting back to something John said off the top here, the Saints are and probably will be really bad for fantasy this season. Like, good luck figuring out who you can use besides Alvin Kamara. The tight ends are not playable. The receivers aren't playable. Now, you know, especially Kenny Stills came in and took a kind of a crazy amount of work from the other guys, from Deontay Harris and Callaway. It's bad. It's really ugly. I am in this game weirdly fascinated with Kadarius Toney. I don't really know what format you're in where you're excited about starting him, but they have nowhere else to go. You know,
it's not weird that you're fascinated by Kadarius Toney in this game, I would say.
Right. A borderline fantasy play. Imagine that. And, you know, he's going to play the slot. That's where he played last week after Sterling Shepard left. And the Saints have not been great against slot receivers. Last week, we saw Jacoby Meyer run 88% of his routes from the slot and put up a huge game against the Saints. You know, I think he could get a bunch of cheap PPR points in this one against the Saints.
And he could get there given all the injuries within the Giants offense, but I would say do not go overboard on Evan Ingram just because of his 6 targets. Remember, he averaged 6.8 targets per game last year, his only year to finally be healthy for all 16 games, but still finished with career lows in catches and receiving yards underneath Jason Garrett. So just be very wary.
Well, you just talked about that miserable offense environment in New Orleans. James Winston's passing yards game by game, 148, 111, 128. And I want to talk about how all of this impacts Alvin Kamara real quick. You know, the usage has been there for the most part, other than that weird second game, but a career low 3.4 yards per carry, 3.9 yards per touch. This is not a pretty picture, Pat. It feels like Alvin Kamara's path to being like an elite top fantasy running back this year is really narrowing quickly.
Well, it's his efficiency is going to be way down. We're used to Alvin Kamara being so efficient, you know, generating these top 5 days on like 15 to 18 touches. And I just think the script is going to be flipped. He's had 3 20 carry games his entire career, and two of them have been the past 3 weeks. And he remains their number one target in the passing game. And he might start looking slower. He's going to be taking more work. He's going to be taking more hits. But other than like what happened against the Panthers in week two, which is probably just an outlier game, the Saints looking that bad, you know, Michael Thomas will be back hopefully in like a month. We're going to trade the efficiency with Kamara, but we're going to make up for it with volume, still lots of goal line chances, and it's going to look different. But I think Kamara, he's like cementing himself yet again as a top five RB5, even if it looks different than we're used to with him.
He's the 16th fantasy running back in points per game right now. But I will say what they've been doing the past three games, since clearly the point is to run as few as plays as possible and not let Jameis Winston turn over the ball. They are capping his rate downfield. It's underneath 10% of his throws that are going 20 plus yards deep. And Kamara's backfield touch rate has risen progressively in every single game, going from 65% in week one to 80% to 87%, handling 27 of the team's 31 backfield touches this past week. So at least they're taking Tony Jones out of the picture, knowing we're only going to have 50, 55 plays a game, and we need to get 35 of those to Kamara.
Sean Payton, I just want to say thanks. I hate it. So that's all I have to say about that.
By the way, Jameis is still trying. By God, he is trying. He trying to log more turnovers. He hasn't figured out how to do it yet, but he is giving his best.
He'll get there. He'll get home.
It's a real conundrum they have going on, because what Jameis wants to be Jameis, and Jameis isn't even fun to watch this year because he's not Jameis. But Peyton, man, he is just not going to let him loose at all.
All right. This is the last of the 1 p.m. games we're hitting. It's Houston at Buffalo. The Bills are favored by 16. At last check.
Well, that's come down.
The largest. Oh, has it?
It was 16 and a half.
Oh, it was. Oh, yeah, it's coming down. I thought you meant Sensei. Anyways, largest spread on the week four slate, a total of 47. Stephon Diggs, Denny, as Buffalo was, you know, scoring 43 on the football team, Diggs once again under 70 yards for a third consecutive game. Have you seen anything so far that actually concerns you big picture when it comes to Diggs?
Most of his numbers are in line. His peripheral numbers are in line with what we saw last year. I believe target share is down from last year when he was just like just a monster, just a target monster, kind of like Ridley was last year for Atlanta. But no, I'm not too concerned about Diggs. And, you know, can a guy go nuclear like every single week for two seasons? It seemed like he was going nuclear every week last year, even without touchdowns. I mean, it was that right. Sort of PPR production where it's like, who cares if he's a touchdown is a cherry on top. Like he's going to get a bunch of targets, bunch of receptions and yards. I think we're eventually going to see that from Stephon Diggs. I'm not sure if John or Pat have seen any numbers that would indicate otherwise.
Seem funny numbers where Matt said he's yet to clear 70 yards, but he's also yet to finish below 60 yards. That seems pretty difficult to do, to hit that bullseye all 3 weeks. He's averaging over 10 targets per game still. And maybe we're using this as too much of a crutch. I mean, it has been 3 games. We keep talking about like weird game flows, but the Bills have definitely had that where just Josh Allen got erased by the Steelers in week one. You know, then they boat raced the Dolphins in week two. And then week three, the game, he should have broken out in week three where they have, you know, 43 points against the football team. But it, like Dennis said, it just doesn't happen every week. And I've seen very little to lead me to believe that Steph Diggs is not going to explode, not going to be the top five receiver we thought we were getting in the summer.
And still just having a 26% target share in a team that clearly wants to throw, I think he's going to be fine. I don't think you worry about it at all. Zach Moss may come in and steal a couple touches and touchdowns here and there, since he's now the second highest in carries inside the 10 and 5 the past 2 weeks since he's been active. Also, the Bills have a team total over 32, the highest on the board, so we expect them all to get there. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry about it just yet. You're just fine with Diggs.
What about the guy that Denny drafted in 32 different leagues heading into this year? I'm talking, of course, about Emmanuel Sanders coming off that big game. Two touchdowns, I think 90-something yards. His first big box score of the season. Daigle, are we trusting this as the start of something that's, you know, obviously not last week, but sustainable, solid production, steady production? Or are we expecting more boom and bust from Sanders moving forward?
I still think it's boom or bust since he's top 10 or fringe top 10 in air yards so far. It's going to come down to the matchup. And while I don't think this is the matchup, I do understand, and they are probably aware, they play the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football next week. So if you have a spot, you know, you need a wide receiver in a flex position, I don't mind picking up Sanders. I wrote this in the waiver wire column, getting him ready for that game, because that's going to be a tremendous production outlook for him.
Sanders is just, he seems like maybe he's going to be a more valuable real life player than fantasy player. He's playing almost every snap, but he's not the primary outside receiver and he's not the primary interior receiver. So it's just going to be hard for him, even in this pass heavy offense, to get those returns every week in fantasy. Like, so games like the Chiefs, you can bet on, but he seems like he's really doing a good job for the Bills. Not so much as a wide receiver three in fantasy.
I'm upset that I haven't been vindicated here. We have Emmanuel Sanders. It has an 18% target share in one of the most pass heavy offenses in the league. Come on. That's something. And his air yards per target is right in line with Stephen Diggs. You know, he's not going to hit a long touchdown like he did last week against Washington every single week, but I think you guys may be underselling my guy, Manny Sanders, a bit.
Very quickly, putting aside any sick ideas Denny might have about Texans tight ends, we can probably all agree that Brandon Cooks is the only remotely playable Houston Texan. 9 catches, 112 yards playing with Davis Mills last week, Pat. We're feeling okay, even though this matchup is a little scary, scary lopsided. We're feeling okay about Cooks, right? It's just a locked-in starter no matter what.
We're feeling okay. The Panthers were giving like ludicrous cushions last week, and a lot of his catches were just like wide open over the middle of the field. And he could see a pretty heavy dose of Tre'Davious White this week, but they have, say what you will for the Texans, they have been more organized than expected on defense for sure. A little bit on offense, like they seem like organized. They just don't have any talent whatsoever. But I sort of weirdly trust them after 3 games. You have to find ways to get Brandon Cooks the ball, or we can at least have faith in their coaching to get him the ball. But it's a tough micro and macro environment for Cooks this week because the offense is bad and his individual matchup could be quite concerning.
I mean, literally, his only competition is Anthony Miller, who was active for the first game all year last week against the Panthers and got a 21% target share with 6 targets. So we're not worrying about that. Cooks should just continue to be fed until they find a suitable trade partner for him.
That's bleak.
And I'm not going to talk about Houston tight ends, just for the record. I'm not a sicko.
5 games down, 5 to go. First, we're going to take a very quick break.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get an edge in your fantasy leagues with player rankings, projections, tiers, and alerts for players on your team or who you are eyeing on the waiver wire by signing up for NBC Sports Edge Plus. And you can do it at a discount. Use the code GOOD10 and get 10% off your annual subscription. Meanwhile, with the NFL season in full swing, the NBC Sports Predictor app has you covered with Sunday Night 7 Predict. With Sunday Night 7, predict what will happen on Sunday Night Football for a chance to win up to $100,000 every week. It's free and easy to play. Download today from your app store or visit nbcsports.com/predictor. I left out a comma there, I think.
You are Ron Burgundy.
One of the most anticipated matchups of week 4, and I'm being serious about this one. the Arizona Cardinals at the LA Rams, a total of 55. Pat, last week, I don't know if you noticed this, but Rondale Moore kind of disappeared from the box score. I think he almost scored on a sweep. But anyways, at the same time, AJ Green and Christian Kirk both went over 100 yards, if I remember correctly. Anyways, how are you approaching this Arizona wide receiver group, you know, past DeAndre Hopkins, the next three guys, in your week four rankings and just in fantasy lineups?
Well, you know, we said last week that Rondale Moore, his limited snaps and routes weren't that big of a deal, because on those limited snaps and routes, they prioritized getting him the ball. And then last week happened, and we were very, very sad. And maybe we were glossing over that a little too much, but I mean, I don't think anyone listening to the show was under the illusion like Rondale Moore was going to be like Mr. Consistency. I mean, hopefully he's not like a true boom or bust, but a few weeks last week, probably baked in for Rondale Moore. And he's already, again, he's put on film what they wanted him to do, what they thought he was capable of. Like his pre-draft profile, he's already displayed that. So I don't think they're going to like go away from Rondale Moore. I mean, I don't know. It is Cliff Kingsbury. It is the Cardinals. I mean, maybe rational coaching. Well, rational coaching is already not winning out, because AJ Green has run the second most routes on the Cardinals. He's run more routes than Christian Kirk, who keeps making big plays, and Rondale Moore, who keeps making big plays. So I guess that is concerning, but last week didn't really change anything for Rondale Moore, and we weren't like selling him as a wide receiver three. You could still kind of sell him as a wide receiver four, but wide receiver four, you get into players with warts. And yeah, he's a boom or bust player, I guess, to put too fine of a point on it.
Must roster in 10-team leagues is what I said, because he's a league winner if given that usage. And you would think, and it's still only three games, that eventually does get that usage. So we will continue to see. But last week's 14 routes, after he had that explosion with 100 yards and over a touchdown, of course, was not what we wanted. But like you said, Matt, had he scored on that sweep inside the 5-yard line, then we're probably not talking about it anyways, because he still got there.
I mean, you got to play a guy who just had negative 10 air yards. A wide receiver who had negative 10 air yards like Rondale Moore. That's just good stuff.
More wide receiver fun on the LA side of things. Robert Woods has a total of 11 catches for 124 yards through three games. Denny, scale of 1 to 10, what's your concern level when it comes to Bob Woods?
8.6. Yeah, I mean, it's up there. It's up there. You know, we talked on Tuesday about, even in an enormously high-scoring, incredibly impressive performance against Tampa, where DeSean Jackson goes nuts, Cooper Kupp goes nuts, Matthew Stafford's posting otherworldly numbers, Robert Woods isn't involved at all. And what place does he have in the offense? He's not the downfield guy. That's Van Jefferson or DeSean Jackson. And he's not the intermediate guy. That's Cooper Kupp, who's just eating up. Apparently, first of all, Cooper Kupp's inventing pass routes to run. And Sean McVay's letting him go ahead and do that, which is something. And then Robert Woods is there to what? Like, get the ball only when Cooper Kupp is completely taken away. You know, he's out there a lot, like Robbie Anderson. You know, the playing time is not really the issue beyond his week one weirdness. But I don't know how you can confidently start him, even in a game like this, which is going to be very high scoring.
And you hit the nail on the head. It's like the same thing I said with Emmanuel Sanders. He's not the primary interior receiver, and he's definitely not the primary outside receiver, and he was not the primary seam stretcher. That's Tyler Higbee. So he's kind of like the second option in every situation. And, you know, the Rams have yet to, like, really be pushed yet. Even against the Bucs, like, that game wasn't really that competitive. Hopefully, like, when the Rams start getting pushed in, you know, these crazy NFC West games, they're always just totally nuts. The play volume is going to go up. You know, like this, like the number of pass attempts is going to go up, and Robert Woods maybe gets back more into that wide receiver three range. I guess it's like jack of all trades, master of none this year. But yeah, it's going to be a big problem for him if they can limit Matthew Stafford's pass attempts, because yeah, he's just not the primary read in any part of the field.
We don't know when it's going to regress in the season. It's so hard to tell, and I wish I could quantify it more, but genuinely, I would make the argument that I just don't think Kupp can sustain a 36% target share to Woods' 20% all year long. Against man coverage this year, Kupp leads the team with 7 targets. Woods has just one, who's bottom on the team against man, and then even going against zone, Woods does encouragingly have 11 targets, but Kupp still leads the team with 17. So really it's just Kupp involved everywhere. But you would have to think, it's only three games, you would have to think defenses eventually catch up to ways to scheme against him, thus then making Woods that more valuable. So I actually lowballed him. I went and bought low this past week in a home league, and I genuinely just want to buy low on this offense, and right now he's the player to do so on.
Well, I want to hit the backfield as well for the Rams. It looks like, I believe, Darrell Henderson is trending toward a return after missing last week, unless I missed a practice report, not in his favor a few minutes ago. But with Henderson out last week, Sony Michel handled 23 touches for 79 yards. Tough matchup there. So, Daigle, last week you talked about how you're expecting Sony to take this job at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, now that he's got the opportunity, you expect him to take over. Maybe that doesn't start this week, but assuming that both guys are active this week, how are you approaching this backfield when it comes to fantasy?
Not a clue, Matt. Not a clue. I will say that in DFS, it's a good spot. We'll talk about it on Friday, that whether Henderson's active or not, even if he's trending so, like, you could actually use Henderson's news, and you could be caught holding the bag if this happens, because maybe just Henderson steps right back in the role. But I think there are greater odds Michelle has now taken the role, since they were always looking to get away from Henderson this entire time anyways. And then Michelle had such a good game against a Bucs front seven that no one has done so. Also, the way you attack the Cardinals is on the ground as a Denny run funnel. And so I think it's a terrific spot for Michelle overall. So what that means for your redraft teams, you have to ask yourself, like, do I trust it this much? And, you know, if it's someone like Nyheim Hines, let's say, that may be the borderline, I still probably go Hines, honestly, with Marlon Mack out the picture. But in DFS, I think it's a great spot to get Henderson at very low roster numbers if Henderson is available.
Only 59% of the yards that I gained against Arizona this year have come through the air. Mm-hmm. So, like John said, they are definitely a run funnel. Even the Jags managed 24 rushing attempts last week against the Cardinals. If we can get some indication as to who will be the lead back headed into this game, of course, it would be easy if Henderson is, you know, sits for one more week, and then Sony Michel would get that backfield to himself. But I'm very into whoever is going to lead that Rams backfield. If we can just get some hint, beat writers, if you're listening, some hint, because that would be excellent, because I think that they have an enormous ceiling in a game, like I said, that will shoot out 55-point over-under.
Yeah, I think we already got the hint over the summer, as John kind of alluded to, where the Rams talked over and over about Darrell Henderson's durability issues. And then in week two, he plays right into their fears and gets hurt. And I do think it's going to be Sony Michel. I have Sony Michel ranked higher, like a mid-range RB3 flex, basically. Mm-hmm. And so the Cardinals get scorched on the ground, 55 total. I actually like Sony Michel, famous last words, as a flex option this week.
It's also, though, this entire game is what I want a part of, because the environment's good as a whole for Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Sony Michel, like whoever's available, because Rams games have averaged 52 combined points, scoring 27 in every game the Rams have, while Cardinals games have averaged 56 points because the Cardinals have scored at least 31 in every game. Both teams also top three in yards per play and yards per attempt on the year. So it's just an environment as a whole we want players from every side on.
Going to throw one more name at you, Sony Michel or Damian Harris has a obviously brutal matchup against the same team that Sony Michel faced last week, the Bucs. Sony Michel, even if Henderson's active, or Damian Harris this week, which way are you going?
Oh, I don't know how you can start, and we'll get there, but I don't know how you can start Damian Harris over.
Yeah, me neither. I don't know.
Anyone
okay.
Right now.
Agreed.
We'll see.
Okay. We'll get there. Oh, a cliffhanger. We'll get there. Okay. I like it. A cliffhanger. All right. The 2-1 Ravens face the 3-0 Broncos. A bit of a similar situation to the Panthers D here, where this Broncos D has been dominating, but they played the Giants, the Jags, and the Jets. Now, on the Baltimore side of things, word came down on Thursday that Lamar Jackson is dealing with what OC Greg Roman called a back flare-up, something we have all experienced at our various ages.
Or maybe experiencing right now, even.
He didn't practice Thursday. Denny, are we worried? Are we actually worried at this point? Are we worried yet?
I'm not worried. I don't love when an injury pops up on Thursday afternoon. I mean, now it comes down to Fridays.
We're saying a Wednesday morning when you're just picking up your baby and, you know, all of a sudden it just starts to hurt for no reason, that kind of thing.
Bend the knees, Pat. You got to bend the knees. You can't exactly. you can't just tilt over at the waist and do it.
I mean, we don't have an indication that he's in danger of missing the game, but it's not great. You know, the Ravens have almost no chance of protecting Lamar here. Ravens are giving up the eighth highest sack rate in the league, and the Broncos have the league's ninth highest sack rate through week three. They're also pressuring quarterbacks at a pretty good rate. I mean, you have to take into account who they play, but Baltimore's offensive line is kind of garbage. So I'm a little hesitant to fully embrace Lamar in this game. I guess his saving grace, of course, as usual, would be his rushing upside, since the Ravens don't have anything else going for them in the rushing game. They have nothing. He is the entire rushing game. I'm a little nervous on Lamar this week.
For what it's worth, Dr. Chow attributed Lamar Jackson's back flare-up and ensuing DMPs to much-needed rest stemming from the somersault he did. Lamar did, not Dr. Chow, onto his hip in week two. And so I am not worried just yet. And I will also say, I think this line is wrong. Because look back to the preseason before week one and the look-ahead number, the Ravens were 3.5-point favorites. And I understand their offensive line injuries have caught up in this time, but not only did the Broncos open with one of the easier schedules against the Giants, Jaguars, and Jets, their front seven injuries have caught up to them as well. So for it to change to where the Broncos are favorites, that seems wild to me. So I still think not only can the Ravens cover, I think they went outright as the better team here.
Are you suggesting that the Ravens coaching staff was not thrilled with Lamar Jackson doing that flip into the end zone?
I think that, and then also recall their point total, which would have looked a lot better if Marquise Brown, of course, didn't drop 21 Ooh. Points.
That was a problem.
Right. Okay, on the Denver side of things, obligatory Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams check-in. Both guys scored a touchdown against the Jets. Gordon, 54% of the snaps to 40% for Javonte. Javonte also fumbled. Pat, how are you ranking these two heading into week four? And in this kind of, you know, seesaw battle, do you feel like Javonte actually took a step back last week in what could have been a big chance to clean up?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've got the biggest distance between the two of them as I've had all season, because Mel has been winning kind of like the important touch battle, like definitely the non-garbage time touch battle. Javonte actually won the goal line touches last week, 3-2. But he got stood up on one of them for a 2-yard loss. And then more concerningly, he lost a fumble on the third. Melvin Gordon did not fumble his goal line touches. He cashed in one. He's had the advantage, not near the goal line, playing their first real opponent. Like, they kind of had the luxury, a very rare luxury, of three games, kind of getting to like experiment with their rookie, the Broncos, like seeing really what he had, what he was all about. That's not going to be a luxury they have against the Ravens. And I do think we're going to see a greater, more sustained Melvin Gordon commitment this week. And I have Mel ranked as a low-end RB2 and Javonte Moore as the dreaded mid-range flex.
Among their wide receivers, not only is it somewhat exciting because this is finally a game for them to be competitive in, but now removing KJ Hamler from the offense, it's a double-edged sword because we know it trickles down to Tim Patrick, who is second on the team in routes run the past 2 weeks without Hamler and Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, of course. But also what we're looking for here is that it's a small sample, but without Hamler on the field, Bridgewater has only thrown down field 20 plus yards deep on 11% of his passes, whereas that number was at 31% with Hamler stretching the secondary. So just something to look for if we see Bridgewater perhaps dumping off, since he's been aggressive this first three games and being top five in deep rate.
Yeah, shocking. I like the matchup here for Denver's pass catchers, because I'm going to use it again. Baltimore is a pass funnel defense, and the targets in Denver are fairly condensed to Sutton, Patrick, and Noah Fant. I like all three of those guys. I'm sure if you drafted Noah Fant, you're probably starting him anyway, but it's a solid matchup. I'm down on both of the Denver running backs this week. I think if the Broncos are going to get it done, they're going to do it through the air.
Denny, Fant or Kyle Pitts, rest of season?
Wow.
I mean, it has to be Fant.
I think you're right.
Oh, no. It's come to this.
Matt, I didn't mean to hurt you.
You know, it's fine. Most generational prospects aren't better than Noah Fant, their rookie years. It's totally fine.
Say, Noah Fant is not nobody.
I know. Yeah. And it's a really good spot for Noah Fant, by the way. Ravens got destroyed by Travis Kelce and Darren Waller. They shut down TJ Hockenson, but what else do you have to do against the Detroit Lions? Fant. We like Noah Fant. We love our Noah Fant, don't we, folks, this week?
We love Albert O, too.
We do, yeah.
to a much lesser extent.
We have three games left, but I don't think I can actually continue, so I'm going to have to shut it down now. Okay, the Steelers are headed to Green Bay, where the Packers are favored by 6.5. I want to talk Pittsburgh wide receivers here first. With no Deontay Johnson last week and with Juju Smith-Schuster leaving early, we saw Chase Claypool devour 15 targets, which turned into 9 catches for 96 yards. So Deontay practiced in full on Thursday. Juju was limited. Claypool was limited with a hamstring injury, and I think we saw him dealing with that late in that game on Sunday. Assuming they're all in there, Daigle, can you feel good about anyone other than Deontay, and do you even feel good about that?
I would still feel good about Deontay since he does have 22 targets in those first two games. The issue is that, and I could not believe this when I saw it, I genuinely was shocked this week, that Ben Roethlisberger has worked from a clean pocket at the league's highest rate in the league so far. Having said that, he's averaged 6.3 yards per attempt when not under pressure, including 3 of 13 on the lawn darts he's thrown, 20-plus yards downfield. So still very scary, but we know the target share will grow, be more vast if Deontay Johnson's in the lineup. He practiced in full on Thursday, so that's what we expect. No longer Najee Harris, 19 targets, and Chase Claypool, 15. So I still trust Johnson. I'm going to continue trusting Chase Claypool to a lesser extent, and you're still playing Najee Harris, who has played every single snap for this offense except 5 all year long.
And is the meme for the Packers still that they're giving like tons of space and cushion underneath again? Because you're going to do that against the Steelers. We are going to get – it's going to be a layup season for both Deontay and Juju Smith-Schuster.
Pat, I'm not kidding. I genuinely, on Monday or Tuesday, I thought – man, Roethlisberger is guaranteed to get the 300-yard bonus on DK. Like, how can we get there? But, like, the big dogs, Mahomes, Josh Allen, are all on the main slate. We can't do it.
We cannot.
I mean, are we ever going to get a Chase Claypool explosion game, or is this offense not even allow that, Denny? Like, are they so limited that we're not even going to see one of those Chase Claypool booms?
I mean, last week was the most devastating 15-target performance you'll ever see. You know, yeah, I mean, right. if a receiver like Chase Claypool can't have a monster game with 15 targets, then it's not happening. I mean, yeah, he could like shed a tackler on a long catch and walk into the end zone for a long touchdown at some point, but that was really discouraging. I know it sounds weird after a guy catches 9 for 96, but it was discouraging. I think you have to lower your expectations a lot for Claypool going forward.
They got to dial up some more Chase Claypool rushing attempts, by the way. With this one-man backfield, change the pace. I think he only has 2 rushes through 3 games. He was a little more like 1 or 2 a game last year, and that would be a really good way for the Steelers to change the pace on the ground.
And didn't Juju already vulture 1 rushing touchdown from Claypool, I believe? Claypool went in motion the other way, and then Juju walked in. That was upsetting.
I just threw up.
Okay, quickly on the Packers side of things, this offense at large is back on track, and most of it's funneling through Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Jones, and Devontae Adams. I don't think any of us really have any questions or spare thoughts about them. If you do, please share them. But MVS missed Wednesday and Thursday due to a hamstring injury. I don't really think we have a lot of questions about the Packers, so I'll ask you this, Pat. Could that, or anything in theory, bring Bob Tonyan back to life, or is Bob Tonyan, as we knew him, gone? Is he gone, Pat?
He's not gone. They're talking about weird game flows. The Packers had several of those, and the MVS absence could be a little concerning. I mean, he's the one guy they have like taken the lid off the defense down the field, other than maybe Big Bob. Big Bob is kind of a lid lifter himself, but yeah, Bob's just one of those guys. The first 3 games, like, I don't feel like we've really learned anything other than, you know, he scored an amazing touchdown that kind of only him and Aaron Rodgers could even do together. Like only throw that Aaron Rodgers might attempt, and Tonyan, one of the only guys that could probably catch it with just his enormous frame. And we're not canceling Tonyan yet. It's been so frustrating. It's only 3 games, though, and we're just now, like, seeing the true Packers offense get into its rhythm. And with Asari as like the low end tight end 1 ranks, high end supposedly tight end 2 ranks are, you just have to keep him penciled in that like that tight end like 10 to 12, 13 range.
It's also hard to do anything for anyone else to make an impact whenever Adams is hogging 55% of the team's targets. So he'll still do that. Aaron Jones, meanwhile, after that disappointing week 1, at least 21 touches in both of his past 2 games, whereas AJ Dillon has totaled 19 touches on the year as a contingency option. And that's about it so far.
Yeah, and Adams, per our research team, was targeted on 56.3% of his routes against San Francisco.
Seems high.
Next game is one you may have heard about. You may have heard about this one. It's the Sunday nighter on NBC. Tom Brady and Tampa Bay travel to New England. I don't know. Have you guys heard that this game is happening?
I have not.
They have Denny and I on the call, actually, on Sunday night on NBC. So check it out, 8:20 p.m. Eastern, Denny and I in the booth in Foxborough.
I'm going to do the Collinsworth slide.
Yeah, Denny's been training for that all week.
Yeah.
The Bucks are favored by 7 with a total of 49. Antonio Brown off the COVID list, expected to play in this one. Daigle, he exploded week 1, very quiet week 2, then obviously missed week 3. Which Antonio Brown are you looking for this week as you look at this Bucks pass catching group at large?
They're all going to catch touchdowns. This is a disaster matchup. The Patriots are probably going to try to hog the ball so Brady does not score at any point. It's not going to happen. It's not going to matter. Even if it's too narrative-y, like the way you beat the Bucks this year, because their defense has been very poor through the air, is just that, through the air. That's also what the Patriots cannot do. And so it's just very concerning all around. We saw last week, yes, they were trailing, even though it was only by a score most of the time until the second half. But they got Giovanni and Bernard involved because they are still the Bucks leading the league in pass play rates with a lead. So it doesn't matter whether they're trailing or have a lead. It's still Tom Brady's show. So no matter if Gronkowski plays, and if he doesn't, by the way, Cam Brink ran 27 routes to O.J. Howard's 8. That's the backup option you're grabbing for Gronk on Sunday night. No matter if Antonio Brown plays, looks like he will. Remember, also, he's been a wide receiver 1 in 5 of his last 9 appearances with the Bucs, regular season appearances. It's just going to be the Brady show. He's going to absolutely crush this defense. They don't have a shot.
I heard he might be upset. And John, you know, there's going to be a Gronk revenge game in addition to the Brady revenge game. No one's talking about the Antonio Brown revenge game.
The media won't talk about it.
At some point, don't they siphon off each other? Like the revenge games, they can't. You can only have so many revenge narratives in one game, right? They can't all thrive.
Well, at some point, you have 3 revenge games in one. It ends of the game, everyone asking like, while you were trying to get your revenge, what else went out the door? Kind of at what cost, basically, did this happen? And was it worth it? Sure, you just beat the Patriots 48-0, but was it really worth it? And they're all questioning their existence in this universe.
We were talking before, Damian Harris's name came up surprisingly early in this show. I'll take responsibility for that. Denny and Daigle seemed like a clear no. You wouldn't start him in any case this week. Pat, I sensed a little pushback there from you. Do you want to expound?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's tough because the Bucks eliminate the run, as we know. But as John said, I mean, the Patriots' only real hope is to play the keep away ball they've played most frequently since last year. James White's on injured reserve. Unless Bill Belichick suddenly trusts rookie Ramondre Stevenson, which there's zero indication, unless he's suddenly willing to commit to J.J. Taylor, 5'6", special teamer Brandon Bolden, I just don't really see what the better option is. And 15 carries, I feel like, is almost guaranteed for Damian Harris, which could be famous last words. The pass just can't sustain any offense. But that part of the board, like post RB24, is just so screwed up right now that if you could feel like anyone is in that 15 carry range, you're just kind of like by definition in the flex range. And I couldn't fade Damian Harris as much as I wanted to. I do have Sony Michel actually ranked ahead of Damian Harris for the record, but it's just, yeah, what is the Patriots? I mean, I guess 40 Jacoby Myers targets, but I think John's right. The keep away time of possession is going to be the plan.
Which is why I think they'll all be involved. It's just a confusing situation to analyze because even last week, with James White injured early, Damian Harris gets benched for what they quoted as pass protection issues. Belichick did. And while J.J. Taylor fits that mold, they didn't give that role to him once White left the field. They actually gave it to Brandon Bolden, who led the backfield in snaps and routes run. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Ramondre Stevenson is going to be active this game.
Yeah.
And if he is, they may just roll with 5 active backs and literally play keep away the entire time.
The Texans plan.
Yes.
When you can use the Texans plan, you gotta do it.
You do it.
You gotta do it.
When Pat started talking a minute ago about the hypothetical possibility of Ramondre Stevenson being more involved, Denny, for those who are only listening and not watching the video, went full prayer emoji in the most sincere way I've ever seen it done. I think needs it badly based on that facial expression.
Yeah, I do need it in a bad way, Bill Belichick. Please consider. No, I mean, but James White being out is big. And Brandon Bolden is, like you guys said, a special teamer. Like, they're not going to be like, okay, Bolden, you're in for the rest of the year. You're blocking. And the struggles, Damian Harris, the struggles in pass protection are real. He's allowed pressure on 30% of his pass protection opportunities through 3 weeks. Not good. not good. This is the time they're going. They need to, I believe, activate Stevenson and get him some playing time.
Ramondre Stevenson, he's not known as a pass catching back, but he's known as a better pass catching back than Damian Harris too. So it could become an interesting situation.
Quickly, so let's say the keep away option fails spectacularly. New England needs to throw the ball. We saw Jacoby Myers had a big game last week, his first big game this season. 9 catches on 14 targets for 94 yards. Very eerily similar to the Chase Claypool game, by the way. But you're more excited about it with Jacoby Myers. Kendrick Bourne also had 96 yards and a score. Pat, how high do you have Myers ranked this week? And is there anything to hang on to when it comes to Bourne as like a desperation option?
Well, I honestly added Kendrick Bourne in it was deeper leagues, like 14 team leagues. But I've had this sneaking suspicion all along that Bill Belichick would just love Kendrick Bourne. I mean, they gave him a ton of money. He's a dirty work, like small things player. So I just kind of, he's a red zone player. He made big plays in the red zone for the 49ers. So I'd had this sneaking suspicion for a while he would get more involved. I mean, last week is definitely his high watermark probably, but it was the first time he got any extended run and he cashed it in. So I wouldn't be surprised if Kendrick Bourne maybe became more of a thing than people think, especially, you know, the tight end thing isn't working so far. Jonah Smith had a drop-a-thon last week. Hunter Henry's not making big plays. So I wouldn't just say Kendrick Bourne last week was a complete fluke, complete outlier. And I mean, if Bill Belichick is smart, I mean, he knows you've got to hit big passing plays against the Bucs. So it could actually be Nelson Agholor is kind of a sneaky wide receiver four this week. Instead of trying to count on like empty Jacoby Myers compiling, I mean, Nelson Agholor could hit some big plays against this really, really shaky Bucs secondary right now. It's just so hard. They're integrating so many new parts still on offense. And it's not like Jonu Smith and Hunter Henry are just going to go away. And it's just kind of, it's difficult to project like different increased usage for any of these guys, even my dear Kendrick Bourne.
And if you are keeping track at home, this is 104 catches for Myers now, 0 touchdowns.
Oh, please, please score. Kobe, I'm begging you, please score a touchdown. You're killing me. I have him in a lot of places, but no, you're right, Pat, about Agholor. Agholor was locked down last week by Marshawn Lattimore. And you know,
Those other Saints corners whose names, you know,
right. And those Bucks, the Bucks don't have anybody like that. The Bucks are banged up in the secondary, even when fully healthy there, it's not all that great of a secondary. So Agholor is probably, well, definitely the upside play, although the compiler Myers is always important.
Just keep shoveling the ball to Damian Harris and set up some pop-a-shot plays on third down where you get Nelson Agholor down the field.
If that happens, I'm going to be so upset if they successfully make this game ugly and the Bucks win like, you know, 20-14 or something. God, that's going to happen, isn't it?
The last game on our agenda is the Monday Nighter, Vegas at the LA Chargers. Chargers favored by 3, a total of 52.5. The Raiders passing game surpassing a lot of our expectations. Last week when we talked, there was quite a bit of skepticism about this whole thing falling apart. Now, it kind of happened again. That brings me to Henry Ruggs, who was not targeted more than 5 times in a game once as a rookie. He's been targeted 7 times in the Raiders' last 2 games, a total of 191 receiving yards. Denny, I think I heard you on a podcast sounding skeptical about Ruggs. Are things changing for you? Like, is Henry Ruggs building a wide receiver 3 case before our eyes?
Well, after I was skeptical, I was not as skeptical about Ruggs. I just want to be clear. Okay. And Pat remains the skeptic, the Ruggs skeptic.
It's hard to remain as skeptical. He's at least showing tangible progress. So I wouldn't say I'm a full-blown Henry Ruggs skeptic still.
Right. His air yards per target it indicates that he's not just being used on go routes, which is what we were looking for. You know, some usage in the intermediate passing game where, you know, you don't have to rely on the 60-yard bomb for any sort of production fantasy-wise. And, you know, one more time, we're going with the funnel reference one more time. The Chargers are the ultimate run funnel, as Daigle reminded us last week. And so I don't know if this is the week where you say, oh yeah, no, I'm committing to Ruggs or I'm committing to Bryan Edwards as a fantasy starter. The environment looks good, I think, but I think this is going to be more about the Raiders running game than we would like to think.
the way the Tuesday 6 p.m. Eastern waiver wire Q&A on whatever platform you're watching now works is that I usually show up tired after writing the column all night, and then you bounce questions off me, and then I will usually put them into the column because people get obsessed with players. And this week that player was Hunter Renfrow. So I was like, okay, I'll talk about Hunter Renfrow, because the issue is Hunter Renfrow, the wide receiver 30 in fantasy points per game in PPR leagues right now, is still running the fifth most routes on his own team. He's leveraged a 16% target share, though, into five catches per game. The issue is that Ruggs still leads him in air yards by over 120, whereas Bryan Edwards is also getting involved from time to time, even though he really only shows up in overtime and no other period. So it's just they're using everyone from Alec and Golden, and of course Darren Waller, who still leads the team in targets and red zone targets. It's an extremely vast target tree. So for Renfrow to basically not be involved behind the scenes, but still has that production, I just think it's regression from everyone except Waller, because it's more like a whack-a-mole situation where we don't know which one's going to go off.
Denny was one of those people, Jax. He tried to get me to talk about Hunter Renfrow as a wide receiver 3 on the Tuesday pod, and I took it out of the agenda.
He did. I can confirm that.
So, Denny, do you want to say your piece now?
Yeah, that all sounded not very affirmative of my priors.
To be fair, though, he is the only one running routes underneath besides Waller. Ruggs and Edwards only go deep. So that's what, well, Ruggs gets a little involved underneath, but that's really what the bull case you make for Renfrow. But overall, it's pretty much just Edwards. And then if you think Raiders shootouts happen, which they have happened the past three games for whatever reason, that's when it's more of a Ruggs game.
Not at all upsetting, by the way, to see Derek Carr airmail a throw to Waller in the end zone last week.
With 300 yards and multiple touchdowns, he becomes the first quarterback in NFL history to do so in four consecutive games to open the year.
It's Carr, by the way. I mean, the two like full overtime periods have helped, but it's pretty hard to dismiss what he's done. I mean, the Ravens defense is not the Ravens defense we've come to expect, but he's done this against the Ravens on the road in Pittsburgh and against the Dolphins. I mean, three teams that are, by the end of the year, even the Ravens probably going to be pretty solid pass defenses. And I keep using the word organized this year. I mean, the Raiders offense, I mean, they're game planning like the hell out of this offense right now. You have to give some credit to John Gruden and Derek Carr.
And off a exciting, tough spot against the Chiefs, which we love the Chargers offense, now back at home, which is honestly in LA going to be more of a home game for the Raiders. I actually think the spot is really good for the Raiders here, and they shouldn't be getting the hook for 3.5 points.
Quick big picture question on the Chargers side of things. I mean, not a lot of question marks when it comes to this offense, especially after we saw them put up big numbers against the Chiefs. I want to talk quickly about Mike Williams, though. 22 catches, 295 yards, 4 touchdowns through 3 games. Daigle, obviously, we can't expect this pace to continue, but I mean, are there any reasons left? Can you even conjure up a reason left to doubt the Mike Williams breakout as being for real?
No. Not at all. Just 2 fewer targets than Keenan Allen, but still obviously the higher ADOT leads the team in end zone targets with 5 as well. I actually think it can continue. Like, there's no reason why this offense would go anywhere else where they would have in the past, but they don't really have a serviceable tight end between Jared Cook and Darnell Palm. It's 3 guys, Keenan Allen, Williams, and Austin Eckler, and that's about it. And that's more than enough since Brandon Staley is such an intuitive and intelligent play caller with Joe Lombardi. So I think Mike Williams is probably here to stay as a top 5, top 10 option.
Yeah, John hit a great point. Just like, that was something all offseason I was concerned about with the Chargers, not adding another weapon, where they only got Jared Cook and then Josh Palmer in the 3rd round of the draft. I'm like, what's the plan? Like, they need another weapon behind all. I mean, not that I totally discounted Mike Williams. I thought they were like a weapon short. I just didn't know. They knew clearly that Mike Williams had something like this in him. I think he's only 2 fewer targets than Keenan Allen. He has doubled up Keenan Allen in yards per route run. I mean, the usage is just totally off the charts. Only Cooper Kupp has more fantasy points than Mike Williams at receiver. And this week, I mean, if he does get in this week, I mean, he's essentially cemented as an every week wide receiver 1. There's just, we'd be out of reasons to fade him.
Barring a mid-season or late-season heater from Keenan Allen, which is not out of the realm of possibilities. We've seen Keenan Allen catch absolute fire for 4 to 6 weeks at a time. Barring that again this year, Mike Williams is going to outscore him. I mean, Mike Williams is going to be the wide receiver 1 on the Chargers.
Keenan Allen tends to be like a challenge accepted type of player in those situations where you're like, well, surely Keenan Allen can't keep getting away with this.
Herbert even said it himself that they trust Williams so much that that fourth down was supposed to be a completely different play, but he checked it and just threw it up in the air, a fade to Mike Williams. And of course they went and won the game. Like they absolutely trust him as their number one receiver.
I've never loved a play quite as much as that play.
It was pretty awesome.
All right, we're at the end of our 10 games. Quickly, let's go around the room and mention what we've got coming up on NBC Sports Edge. Daigle, you can hit it first.
DFS Building Blocks, Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, with myself and Kyle Dvorak. The big question, since on FanDuel, Derrick Henry's 10-2, but the Titans have nowhere else to throw to, do you still plug him in your lineup and sacrifice one of Tyreek or Travis Kelce, or do you pay down at running back since Jonathan Taylor, who may not have Quentin Nelson, is a very bad price, just 6,600. We'll talk about it all tomorrow.
Check out the rankings, which are now live on the site, and will be updated throughout the weekend. We've got some pretty unfortunately big injury issues this week. We'll be monitoring Julio Jones, we'll be monitoring George Kittle, make sure Dalvin Cook's actually good to go. So check out the ranks on the site.
I have my kicker column up that comes up on Tuesdays.
That is Mike.
For the record. For the record. Guys, it's McPherson season tonight. Jags, Bengals. You get McPherson, you plug him in, you feel alive as your kicker makes three field goals on Thursday night, and you get it. It's a huge thrill, trust me. And then I have my target decoder column where I try to ease your fears about Tyreek Hill and a couple other high-profile pass catchers.
And in that kicker column, you have 5,000 words off the top about Justin Tucker's 66-yarder, yes. I believe, right, Denny?
It's being published as a book next month.
It's a long form.
So it was edited down from 8,000 for the site, but all 8,000 will be in the book.
Okay, that will do it for us. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a second to rate and review us as well. A reminder, if you're looking for the other 6 games on the schedule, go back and listen to part 1 of the preview show. Thanks to everyone for listening on the podcast and watching live on YouTube. Pat, Daigle, Denny, thanks guys. Good luck in week 4, everyone.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.